You just have to sacrifice something that is in place to keep you numb. And
Oh.
that is what Western society is really good at doing, is giving us all of these opportunities to numb. Because an awake society can't be controlled. Going straight to the top, just put the sack on the clock. I am Rihanna's a shot. I'm going straight to the top.
Yo, 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 what's going on, everybody? Mike here, Sports and the Real Shit Podcast, coming at you guys once again with another episode. Don't forget to like and subscribe and share with your family and friends, as always. Let them know what we have going on over here, all the great things we're talking about. Not just sports. Real life matters. Speaking of real life matters, today I have a special guest with me, Nicole Harmony. So you guys are probably going to get tired of me bringing on people to talk about mental health, but that's okay. I think it's a super important topic, and the more I hear about it and learn about it, the more important I feel like, you know, we need to talk about it in different ways from different viewpoints. So Nicole's here to help me talk about mental health, specifically men's mental health, from her point of view. She's a trauma-informed coach, specifically dealing with men and helping them overcome or deal with childhood trauma, those who haven't gotten over it. She helps men to recognize the repetitive, unhealthy behaviors and patterns and habits that are preventing them from, you know, living in the abundance that they're supposed to be living with. She does this because she has created her own, we'll call it methodology, the memory integration technique. The men that she's worked with so far, she hasn't had any failures, 100% success rate. So I'm excited to have Nicole on to talk about mental health, men's mental health, and the steps we can take to overcome some of the trauma in our past and our childhood that keeps us from experiencing life to the fullest. Now, I will say that Nicole is a Florida Gator fan. So that does take her down a notch, but we'll forgive her for that. And she is a Dallas Cowboys fan, which will also take her down a notch, but she's a realistic Dallas Cowboys fan because she recognizes that Jerry Jones is actually problematic and the Dallas Cowboys will never win a championship as long as he's the owner and GM. So she's a realistic Cowboys fan. We'll give her a plus for that. She's a Gator fan. She gets a minus for that. So she evens out at a zero to start off the podcast. But Nicole, glad to have you on. Thanks for reaching out, and I'm excited for this conversation. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you, Mike. I'm doing amazing. Actually, it's morning here in Thailand.
Morning in Thailand. My goodness. Yes, so we are global here on Sports and the Real Shit Podcast.
Yes, well,
welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for, it's an honor to be here. It's an honor to share my message on your platform and with your community. So thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Like I said, I think this is an important conversation. I've had it before. I'm having it now. I'm going to continue to have it. I've always been interested in human psychology. So my dad was a psychiatrist, actually. But I took a liking to psychology. I thought I was going to minor in psychology, but I was too lazy to actually finish the minor part of it. But that's a different conversation. But I'm always interested in how, you know, people think, understanding, you know, why people do things, why people act a certain way. And a lot of the trauma that we have as kids, especially as men, we overlook them. We're forced to overlook them and not deal with them. And as a result, we end up facing the consequences as adults, and some of it in really, really serious ways. So we're going to talk a lot about male suicides in this episode, right? A lot of us know people who have committed suicide or have people who have thought about suicide. So this topic here might hit home, surely, for some of you guys. Just to throw out some numbers here, in the U.S., male suicides account for 75% of all suicides. That accounts for about 36,000 suicides a year committed by men. This is the second highest cause of death among men under the age of 45. obviously it's a problem. Men, fellas, we don't talk about it. So we have an expert here to help us talk about it, to help us learn to talk about it, and to help us know how to remove that trauma for, or overcome that trauma that we've dealt with for so long in our lives. So let's get into it, Nicole. I guess we could start, you know, how did you get started in this space of mental health, specifically dealing with men and the trauma they've experienced?
So I always say that I didn't go and search for this niche. It found me. And I was training to be a health coach, a health and a life coach in 2020. And I was doing the whole health coach, you know, kind of training. And I knew that I wanted to go deeper because I knew for me personally, the challenges that I was experiencing with, I had chronic pain, facial nerve, chronic pain. I had been challenged for that for like 10 plus years. And nobody was able really to give me any kind of root cause to it. I was actually misdiagnosed in 2010 and was treating something called trigeminal neuralgia for 10 years. And it was when I was still trusting Western medicine, which I no longer do. And they gave me a prescription for Lyrica and walked me to the elevator and said, I'll see you in 60 days. Wow. And that was kind of like the jumping off point for me to go down the rabbit hole of Western medicine and the big pharma and how they were basically just, they're just keeping us sick, you know, in this cycle of trauma, you know, yeah. A different kind of trauma, but yeah, in a cycle of trauma. And so, it wasn't until a couple of years later that I found my first emotional healer, and she helped me unravel a trauma that I had experienced when I was 8 years old that I had suppressed. And it was through a series of questions where my brain, my subconscious was unlocked, and it just basically threw this file onto a table, you know, metaphorically, obviously. And this memory came into my forefront, and I just started crying. And I was in kind of like a hypnotic state that she had guided me into. And she was like, why are you crying? Tell me what you see. And it wasn't any kind of, it wasn't like sexual abuse or anything like that. But it was something that was so traumatic to my body that it disrupted my physiology. And I carried that belief of, I'm not worthy of love. I'm not worthy of being safe. I'm not worthy of being supported, because that's exactly what was happening when I was 8 years old. I wasn't safe. I wasn't being supported. And those beliefs, what it is almost, they call it neuroplasticity, where the brain was imprinted with this limiting belief. And I carried that through every relationship, every career choice that I made, every choice that I made in my personal life. And it was challenging. I had awful relationships after that. Like combined with my father, who was absent from my life emotionally. He was a great provider and is still a great provider. He's still with us. But he was emotionally unavailable to me. And so I chose emotionally unavailable men as my partners because of that neuroplasticity, that imprint on my brain that had happened so long ago. And so to make already a very long story short, I saw what occurred within me and my body and the way that it shifted with emotional healing. And I knew that one day I was going to train to do that for others and be in service to others, because you can't take somebody into the light if you've never been in that kind of darkness. You can't guide them in any way, shape, or form unless you have experienced that level of darkness yourself.
So can we step back for a second? You mentioned your dad being emotionally unavailable. So I feel like that's a typical characteristic of men, at least the men that I know.
Yeah.
So now it's like a big circle, right? What do we heal first? So as a dad myself, like, How do I guess I don't want to get there yet, but I kind of do. Like, now you're making me feel like, am I emotionally unavailable to my kids? How do I know if I'm emotionally unavailable to my kids, right? So I won't raise kids who have that neuroplasticity of emotional unavailability. Now I have 5 boys. I don't know how it impacts boys versus girls, but I'm kind of interested in that. Like, how does what were you looking for in your dad that he didn't provide? Maybe that's a lesson that me and my audience can take away, at least from this part.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I was looking for, and as you're saying that, a memory flashes in my head. you know, this is a part of me that I've been trying to integrate for years, and there's still little teeny tiny parts of her that are still making those decisions, you know, in my auric field. They're still little, they're still disassociated a little bit, even though all the work that I have done. So this one memory comes into my head. My dad would go and he would walk across the street to the school across the street from us, because he had such a difficult job. He had a very stressful job and he had to come home and decompress, but he didn't have the emotional capability to share that with his children and his wife, that this is what I need to do in order to come back and be my best self. He would just leave. And so I would see him walking across the street when all I wanted to do was play Barbies with him, or, you know, have him ask me about my day, or just really pay any attention to me. He would come home. He would do that. He would park himself in front of the TV and he would watch sports or the news. And so, yeah, I mean, to answer your question, it's all about time spent. You know, are you spending quality time with your kids? Are you on your phone? Are you on any kind of device, any kind of screen, TV screen included? Or are you actually connecting with that other little human being that is very formidable between the ages of 0 and 18 years old? Between the ages of 0 and 8 years old is when our belief system is created. And that is through primary caregiver society, you know, anybody in their energetic field, their teachers, their belief systems are being created. So if you are, and I'm not saying you, but if you are on your screen and your child is wanting attention, then they're going to create a belief, or I don't ever speak in absolutes, but it's a possibility that they create the belief that I'm not worthy of attention.
Now, okay, I hear that. But kids nowadays, I call them, especially my kids' age, right? I have, my oldest is 13. I call them the iPad generation.
Yeah. Because
they're on their screen as well. So if I'm on my screen and they're on their screen, am I doing something wrong? And I know a lot of parents my age, right? What are we, Gen X, I guess? We're raising kids in this generation who are all about their screen time. They don't actually do very well with communicating without their screen. Like, they prefer texting their friends and, you know, video chatting with their friends and all that, as opposed to in-person conversations, versus when we were growing up, right? That stuff wasn't available. So do you feel like modern technology may take away from the hurt that would have caused, versus compared to, you know, decades ago when we were growing up without that? Like, is being absent today or emotionally unavailable today different than what it was back then?
I mean, in definition terms, no. And it's interesting that you bring up, you know, we have taught, exactly, the parents have conditioned. They're the ones who taught them how to be on their screen. I mean, that's the real raw truth, right?
Yikes. Okay. You got me there.
Yeah. It all starts with the parents, and specifically it starts with the men in the house as the leaders. They're the ones that are going to provide the belief systems. They're the ones that are going to provide the spiritual leadership in the house. They're the ones that are going to provide the discipline, or at least, you know, this is what we hope.
Yeah. No, I get that. I receive that. That's painful to hear, but it's true. We set the tone, and unfortunately for many of our households, it's more convenient to place them in front of the TV and give them the iPad than, you know, to do the hard work that we had to do in the past. So, okay, I'll accept that, and we can move on. So, you work with men specifically.
Mm-hmm.
What led you to that? Right. So I know you talked about, was it because of your dad and wanting to see men, you know, be better than the representation of men that you had, or what led you to specifically focus on men?
So there was a couple of different factors. Yes. My dad was a big portion of that. And then my relationships in the past as well, because I saw, once I did start doing the work, I saw what the potential was for these past relationships to be. Not that I was going to go back and try to fix them. You know, I don't fix anybody. I create a space for people to heal themselves. But the men, the way that it specifically landed in my lap, and I say that quite literally, I was micro niching down a couple of years ago with a business coach, and I did a market research, and I just threw it out to my community, both men and women, and 85% of the people that responded were men. And then when I got on the phone with them to do this market research call, they opened up to me in ways that they said to me, I've never opened up like this to anybody before. And they would cry on the phone with me. And I realized that there is no place for men to put down their pain. There's no place for them to put down their sword. And majority of the, you know, Brené Brown, I don't know if you're familiar with her, but I was watching a video recently, and a man walked up to her after one of her speeches or, you know, whatever, her events, and she was signing books, and she did The Art of Vulnerability, I think it's the name of the book. Amazing book. And he walked up to her and he said, I'm curious, why don't you mention men in your speeches? And she said, oh, well, I don't work with men. He was like, that's convenient. And she knew that she was about to get an earful from this guy. And she said that he was like, do you see the three daughters and the wife that you just signed those books for? They would rather me die on top of my white horse than see me fall down. And I was, that hit me so wow. hard, to the point that I'm getting like goosebumps and I'm about to cry, because our men are not allowed to falter. And if they do, then they're shamed, judged, and criticized for it. And in reality, men are human beings as well, and they're imperfect. But we put them on this pedestal of they can do no wrong, and they should do no wrong, because, God forbid, we don't feel safe. And getting more safe is being able to hold your woman in her emotions. She's going to feel safe when she feels safe with you being able to hold her. And you can't hold somebody in their emotions if you don't know how to hold yourself in your own. I don't even know where that came from. But that is what brought me to working with the men, because I knew that I had a skill set, and I knew that I had the heart in order to step into the space with integrity and be able to support them in ways that they probably have never felt supported in their lives.
Yeah, that's 100% true. So how do you get men to then open up to you? And like you mentioned, all the responses, basically all the responses were from men, right? Knowing the men that I know, we're not trying to be revealing of our, you know, to be emotional, to reveal what bothers us, right? To anybody, our wives, significant others, like, we don't tell anybody anything. We're super secretive. We hold everything in until there's an outburst, right? And then you find out, oh, you know, yeah, I've been mad for a long time. I've been holding something in. So from my understanding, men generally aren't fans of going to therapists, especially female therapists, right? They feel like they can't be totally open. They can't share everything. You won't understand, right? You're not a man. How do you understand what I'm going through? You know, I can't share everything. If I share everything, I feel like I'm less of a man. Like you said, the society has programmed us to just not be human at all, right? To just put on this facade that we're these, you know, big, bad, you know, dudes that, you know, nothing phases. We can't reveal anything. At the risk of being called, you know, all types of names and weak and things like that. So how do you somehow get all these men who are supposed to be big, bad, tough, right, non-emotional, to open yourselves to you in your practice?
By being me. I can't answer that question because I'm just who I am, and I offer what I offer, and the ones that come to me are ready to open up. I don't force anything at all. I create the space that is safe and supportive, and then they feel comfortable opening up. The way that they come to me, though, is they're on their last straw. Like their rope is quickly unraveling, and they're dropped in so far into their pain that the only solution is to actually integrate these traumas that have been that have been plaguing them their entire lives. Like, that is how they open, because when they come to me, that little one that's living inside of them, that's making the decisions, that's sabotaging every good thing that comes into their life, is so ready to not be the bus driver, so ready to give up the contract that they signed so long ago to keep that adult version of them safe. Because that's essentially what's happening. They signed this contract when they were 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old to keep the subconscious mind safe. And the subconscious mind is the adult version. You know, the subconscious mind is our soul. And that grows with us from previous lives, if you believe in that. And yeah, they come to me already in pain, and I irrigate and I tourniquet the wound in a way that they've never had done before, in a way that a therapist hasn't been able to do for them. Some of them have gone to therapy, and they tell me, they share with me, I've never experienced the level of healing that I've experienced with you, and I've been in therapy for 10 years. Because sometimes therapists don't have the skill set to go to the root cause. They just talk about it. And I actually go to the root cause and I pull out the root, or I hold the space for you to pull out your own root.
Wow. So you hold a space for them to pull out the root. You get to the root cause. You say it's different than Western, right? We'll call it Western therapy technique. So let's talk about that a little bit then. So how is, you know, the memory integration technique different from what the therapist that people are used to seeing here in the States, right? I mean, one of my good friends is a mental health therapist. He doesn't practice anything close to this, right? So he's probably clinically trained or classically trained, however you want to phrase it. How would you say, you know, how is the memory integration technique different than what people are used to? And also, you seem to focus a lot on, you know, childhood trauma. Can you talk about why that focus is in your practice is there? Because I haven't gone to a therapist, but I don't know anyone who really has mentioned to me, yeah, that's my focus, is pulling out that childhood trauma so that you can be healed at 35, 40 years old. It's usually, okay, what's going on in your life now? Let's talk about it. So why do you feel like it's so key in your practice to start from childhood when, you know, somebody's 45 years old? Is that really, you know, what's bothering them? Or is it because they're not having a good time at work. They don't like where they're at in life. They don't like their career. They're looking to make a change, but they can't. Maybe they're not happy with their family life at home. Something's wrong, right? Usually, I feel like, you know, that's what mental health here in the States is about. You know, what's bothering you now and keeping you from, you know, being mentally healthy, not going all the way back and pulling something 40 years ago that's probably, you know, tucked away that you don't really want to talk about, because if you talk about it, maybe it opens up some wounds that you don't want to open up.
And that's a great question. So like I said in the beginning, our belief systems are created between the ages of 0 and 8 years old, and that can be in the womb as well. It can happen in utero because babies can hear, you know, what's
really
going on. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, they can feel the anxiety that the mom is experiencing. If you are adopted, then you have more than likely been born with an abandonment wound, an existing abandonment wound already, because the mom felt the anxiety inside, or you could feel the anxiety of the mom inside of the body.
Wow.
The emotions.
Wow.
So when you have a belief system, let's just take chaos and whatever that may look like in the household. So between the ages of 0 and 8 years old, you have grown up with chaos. That is your baseline. That is your normal, quote unquote, normal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 9 to 14, maybe the parents have gotten a divorce and the mom has remarried and you've gone with the mom. And they have a loving relationship. Well, that child, if that child has not integrated the 0 to 8 years old chaos, that child will stir the pot, will create scenarios to get back to chaos, because that's the normal that they felt. Go 14 to 18 years old, same thing. Choosing relationships, choosing people to go with, you know, in junior high and high school. If they feel chaos, then that feels good to them. That regulates their nervous system, their emotions. Now go past 18 to 25, your belief systems have already been created, right? That's when the patterns are developed. That's when the habits are developed. That's when the bad behaviors are developed. That's when you start choosing careers that show you that you're not worthy of the compensation that you're getting. You're not worthy of the time. You choose bad partners. You choose bad relationships. The choices that you make are inevitably created by those formidable years of 0 to 8 years old. That is when the belief system is created.
So we're... So basically what happened in childhood pretty much doomed us to be who we are emotionally as adults. So the fact that you doubt your abilities, you're not as confident as you should be. You're saying that dates back to childhood. And I'm trying to think of myself, I'm trying to put myself in this story here. And I'm like, I feel like I was supported as a child, but as an adult, for whatever reason, I have these doubts, as most adults do. Men have doubts, you know, their abilities all the time, you know, in the workplace, you know, whatever it is. So then the question could be, right, for someone who's skeptical, what if they don't remember their childhood being all that traumatic or chaotic, but somehow they're dealing with that chaos and trauma, like they're attracted to that today? What would you say to that?
I mean, if I was on the phone with somebody and I would just start with a series of questions, I would dig into their childhood, because that part of that not remembering is part of a trauma response. That little one, which we'll call our shadow, because it's basically shadow work is what it is. But a lot of people don't know what that terminology means. But our shadow is that part of us that we are just kind of like shoving to the side. It's still with us, like, right? The light shines on us and there's a shadow behind us, right? but we shame it and we judge it and we criticize it and we suppress it. But the shadow will tell you more than anything. And I would just start digging in and digging down deep and really drilling down to see exactly what it was like in the household and help bring awareness and bring light to, and this isn't criticizing the parenting. We were raised by imperfect humans. So we are going to have traumas in our background. And it's not society's job to decide what level of trauma the brain experienced, because the brain decides that. The brain decides how disruptive the physiology was during that occurrence. I mean, my trauma that I experienced, a walk fell on my head whenever I had to leave my home. My parents had gone out to dinner. They had left me at home alone with my sister. She went out with her friends and left me behind alone. And I was only 8 years old. And in 1981, that was unusual. You didn't leave an 8 year old child alone in 1981. Mm-hmm. I got scared because I had the flu, and I called my friend to come and pick me up. And we were decorating for Christmas, and a big electric walk fell on top of my head, split my head open. And that night, my parents got so angry at my sister. She was 16 years old at the time, and they kicked her out of the house. And I heard her crying on our front doorstep. And the way that the emotional healer helped me unravel it was that I blamed myself for that. Even though an 8 year old can't possibly know the level and the levels that my sister had to reach in order for my parents to arrive at that decision. To me, it was me that caused that. But in reality, things had built up over time. But again, I was 8 years old. I didn't know any better. I mean, I knew that the house was disruptive, but I didn't know that. I blamed myself. I blamed myself for 35 years. And I took that and made such poor choices with careers and relationships and friendships because of that one incident when I was 8 years old. I mean, I'm sure that there were others, but that was the big one that came forward when I first worked with an emotional healer and that was working with my subconscious mind. So society doesn't decide what the level of trauma, we call it big T and little T trauma, your body does. And so just because the conscious mind and the logical mind doesn't think that it experienced any trauma, the subconscious mind more than likely has other ideas, and it's just being suppressed.
Yeah. Yeah. No, as you're talking, I mean, I could see some things, you know, folks would consider, you know, traumatic, maybe I didn't consider traumatic when I was first asking a question. Those things are probably, you know, traumatic. So my dad passed when I was young, when I was like 6 years old. Right. Maybe that impacts me a certain way now. I don't know. I don't think so. Right. I feel like that's something I've left behind. So I don't know how something like that could be impacting me now. So I guess what I'm saying, I'm agreeing with you now that things happen in our childhood that we may not believe were traumatic and we need to recover from. And maybe we just, you know, we overlook them. We don't put them in that category, but we should. But we were talking before we recorded about sexual abuse in men, right? That's a big one. And we talked about that. First of all, men don't talk about anything, but we're definitely not going to talk about being abused, sexually abused. You mentioned that 1 in 6 men under 18 experience sexual abuse. Nobody talks about it.
Yeah. 1 out of 6 men in your community have experienced some form of sexual abuse before they are 18.
Can you touch on that a little bit? Like, what your experience is with that? If you've dealt with clients with that? We talked about the fact that, you know, men, especially to brag, right? Men nowadays, we're thinking when we hear about it, I mentioned to you, when you hear about it in school, like, or the teacher in the middle schooler, you know, were caught, you know, in an intimate relationship. Those of us who are older, we're always joking. Oh, we wish we had a teacher that hot or something like that, when it's really abuse. Like, how, we're clearly wrong, right, in interpreting it that way. So what is your experience in dealing with that, and, you know, men who are sexually abused and coming forward and even admitting that they're sexually abused?
So there's been a couple of different scenarios that I've experienced with the men and the sexual abuse, and it hasn't come out right away. Necessarily. It has a couple of times whenever I'm in, you know, kind of my consultation calls, like they'll start talking about it because they feel comfortable and they really just want to be seen and heard, you know, and they want to know that what they experienced is valid in their mind, because a lot of them will be like, well, wait a minute, I enjoyed it. So was it sexual abuse? I have this, had this one client that I had to bring him to the point of anger and rage, and actually almost did kind of a role play where he told me, his abuser, exactly what he was feeling in that moment. And being able to, for him to have that awareness and be able to have that child, that 14-year-old child, actually use his voice in such a way that was able to release so much pain and emotion that he has been suppressing for 26 years. I think he's 40 years old. But he kept saying, but I enjoyed it. You know, I was aroused. I was like, what you have shared with me is coercion. You were groomed. And you were brought to a point, and you're a man. So your hormones work differently and your body works differently and it receives it differently than a woman. A man has to come to arousal in order to come into the experience of rape, unless it's sodomization, right? So you had to be aroused. That does not take away from what the abuser did to you, what this woman did to you, this 40-year-old woman did to you. And he, after that happened, I remember receiving a message, and it shifted so much in his life from being able to just give that younger version of himself a voice that he's never been able to have. And so the second scenario is somebody coming through and within 20 minutes telling me about the sexual abuse that they experienced either as a small child from like an uncle or an aunt, you know, a coach, or again, coercion. There's a lot of coercion out there where the adults would watch. They would be voyeurs of what was going on with the teenagers that they groomed and they brought into their home. And that's abuse as well, right? That's sexual abuse as well. Right. It's covert sexual abuse, but it's still abuse. And again, the body is the one that decides, not society. It's the brain of the person that experienced the trauma. So those are the two instances that I've experienced. And it's not like I'm out there saying, hey, come to me if you got, you know, sexual abuse. It's more about, actually, I have pivoted because I think that it's something that needs more awareness brought to it, because that is a lot of why these suicides are happening. I can't speak for every 78% of the population. By the way, it's 78%, not 75%. 78%. So even add 3%, and that adds thousands to that list of men. So I can't speak to all the 78%, but the ones that I have known personally have some form of sexual abuse in their background that they have not yet integrated and or addressed, either with their abuser or just anybody that would be there to support them and help them integrate that part back to them.
I'm going to be honest with you. Most guys aren't going to admit that they were abused, though. So that's why I'm interested to hear what you say. You know, you had guys actually admit that they were sexually abused. Most guys are like, yeah, I had sex with, you know, at 13 years old with, you know, so-and-so, right, who was much older than me. Or, like, it always comes across as, like, oh, it was a joke. I lost my virginity so young to this, you know, older person, or this older person that, you know, did this to me. We never talk about it as if it's traumatic. So how do you get someone to recognize that something like that is traumatic, to turn the corner to say, hey, I enjoyed it, like you said, right? My body enjoyed it. As an adult male now, I can brag about the fact that I had sex with my teacher, let's make it up, right, at 13 years old. How do you get someone to turn the corner and say, no, actually, that probably wasn't a good thing?
So there's a couple of different avenues that I take, and it again comes down to a question sequence that I have with the client. And specifically, one that's coming in my mind is, yes, you enjoyed it. And this may have happened over a couple of different sessions. It's when I can zero in on a belief, a limiting belief that has become a pattern, then I'm always going to look for the root cause. And in this case, the root cause was bad relationships. And where did the bad relationships start? And then that's when the sexual abuse came out. And so it's really going to that version of themselves, that part of themselves that experienced the abuse, and finding out what beliefs were created in that moment. And I do that through the memory integration technique, where we actually go back to that part, that younger version, shrinking the body down into the younger version of themselves, and looking out through their eyes, and then them telling me what they were experiencing in the moment. And in this instance, it was, I don't want to be here. This doesn't feel right. I don't love her. Why is this happening? She's taking advantage of me. I don't deserve this. I deserve a woman, or I deserve a teenage girl to share this with. This was his first time too.
So you get grown adult men to talk about this experience as if it's happening currently?
Yeah, and it's not, I'm not speaking to the adult. I mean, I am. The adult is sitting in front of me, but essentially it's that younger version that experienced the trauma that I'm speaking to.
Yeah, so let's get into that then, because that's interesting. The memory integration technique, like, how does that work then? Like, I've never heard that before. How are you talking to the child when the adult male is sitting in front of you? How do you get to that inner child?
So I take them through kind of like a light hypnosis. I have them drop into their body. And again, I have them shrink down into that younger version. I say, slip your fingers into his finger slots, slip your toes into his toe slots, put your heart where his heart is, and take a deep breath with his lungs. And I'm watching the entire time to make sure that the client is connecting with my voice and connecting with their body, and then that younger version of themselves. And then I have them, before, I've asked them a question of, what does the environment look like? And then I have them look out through their eyes, and they see the environment that they were in. And they're experiencing the pain. They can feel the pain of what was happening. Now, if it's a physical abuse, I don't allow the client to be there for very long, if at all. And then I have the older version, the adult version, step in and actually take that child away out of the experience, out of the trauma, championing for that younger version. Because what's essentially happening in your life when you are creating sabotage is it's that younger version that's making those decisions. And so we really just want them to integrate back into us and be that child part of us, that younger version of us, full of wonderment, full of joy, full of love, and then allow the adult to take over and make the decisions, being the confident adult. I mean, it's a somewhat complicated process, but it's really not. Like, the way that I am able to...
Yeah, it sounds like a lot.
it's a lot, yeah. But the way that I'm able to guide the client is seamless. And there's usually little to no resistance because the child is so tired of driving the bus. They don't want to do it anymore. And when I ask them, I'm like, are they ready to give up the contract? And inevitably the client's like, oh my gosh, yes. And they're like holding their hands up and they're just like, yes, please. And they immediately feel this heavy weight lifted off of their body. They're just like, I've never felt like this. Like, I feel so much lighter. And they cry because they're holding so much in. Our emotions weigh on us so much. That's a lot of the reason there's a woundology. And when people have extra weight on their body, they have inevitably experienced some sort of abuse because they don't want to present their true selves to the world. And so they will cover it up with weight. So when people talk about yo-yo dieting and things like that, don't focus on what you're eating. Focus on your emotions first. Focus on inside first, and the weight will melt off your body. You can eat salads all day long and drink water and not drink alcohol, but if you're not dealing with the inside, you're not going to get anywhere.
So as you're talking, I can see my audience, right, wondering. Obviously, this is totally different than what they're used to hearing. What do you get any pushback from people who are like, what are you talking about? You're like hypnosis, and you know, taking back to my inner child. I just need to talk to a therapist. You know, I'm sure the traditional academic community probably frowns upon this kind of therapy. What kind of pushback do you receive, you know, from your practice, either from the community or from, you know, would-be, you know, clients, if any?
I mean, yeah, I definitely get pushback. But if they're not aligned with my methodology, then I'm not going to be able to support them. You have to be, excuse me, let me just shift a little bit. Mm-hmm. You have to be ready and willing and open to receive the medicine that I'm going to provide to you. The pushback that I've received as far as like in the academic community is not a lot, actually. And more therapists are actually going and learning these types of techniques in order to bring them into their practice, because coaches have kind of put a pin in a different area that's more effective than just talk therapy. And so talk therapists are actually going back and learning these levels of technique and bringing in these tools and skill sets to their practice.
Okay. That's good, because I think I told you my wife's a registered dietitian, but some of the stuff that she does is outside of what traditional medicine would say, hey, you know, you should do. So I know she, you know, she gets pushback, you know, from people saying it wasn't part of a study and, you know, this and that. So I'm sure you would experience the same thing. So I'm going to ask practical questions, right? I'm putting myself as a potential client of yours. What if I'm not comfortable with hypnosis? Am I just out of the question for you?
I mean, it's not, I don't call, I call it hypnosis in order for layman's terms, but it's not really hypnosis. It's, okay. It's really just kind of connecting to your body. So I'm not going to make you cluck like a chicken. I'm not going to make you do anything. It's not my power that is being put over you. It's allowing your body and your subconscious mind to relax and open and be accessible by you. I'm just the guide. I don't do anything. I ask the powerful questions and I help you connect to your body so you can heal yourself. I'm not the healer. I don't know if that answers your question. No,
that does, because listen, again, I'm a practical guy, right? And if I were listening to this, I would be asking the question, am I taking some kind of psychedelic drug? You know, like, am I doing something crazy to get to that, you know, state where I'm talking to my inner child? Excuse me. And you're saying, no, that's not the case. You just have a method of asking questions that take you back to that child.
Yeah. I have a presence that I'm able to connect to the subconscious mind at a deeper level, and people feel comfortable. That child comes out and feels comfortable and safe. And I do ask, I'm like, would it be okay if I talk to him or her? And sometimes they'll be like, no, they're kind of pulling back. And then I'll just, again, go a little bit more gently, or I'll wrap up the session and try again. It's all about feeling safe. That child needs to feel safe in order to open up. That child needs to feel supported in order to open up. And so I build that rapport with the child, with that younger version of themselves. At the same time, I'm building up with the client, because they're one and the same. They're connected. But again, the child is driving the bus.
In which ways, what adult symptoms would you say are a result of childhood trauma? So we talked about sexual abuse, right? Like, how can those things reveal themselves at adults? Help us recognize some of those things that maybe are from our childhood that we probably should deal with.
So if you have been abused as a child, you may experience promiscuity as an adult, multiple partners, unhealthy relationships, not able to connect emotionally to your partner, whether that be through sex or just in everyday life, being an avoidant, an attachment style avoidant, even being anxious, preoccupied as an attachment style as well.
What is that? What is anxious, preoccupied? You said anxious, preoccupied. What is that?
Anxious, preoccupied is when you have to have validation from another to make you yourself feel worthy in the relationship. You always have to, you seek validation.
Hold on. Time out. See, now this is getting interesting, because there are women who, you know, they call it their love language. They want a compliment all the time, right? Like, they want to be told they look good. Like, that's their love language. So I was told that's a good thing for the women, right? You tell them you love them. You tell them they look good. That's a good thing. That's not so much like a trauma response or anything. But what you're saying, it sounds like it is. So maybe you're going to give me some ammo here to take back to my wife and tell her, you know, hey, there's more trauma speaking here.
So it's interesting that you bring up love languages, because our love language is the unmet needs that our child self didn't get.
I knew it, Nicole. I knew it. I don't have the degrees to back me up. I knew it. Oh my God. Keep going. Yeah. I'm listening now. Go ahead.
So a lot of men's love language is physical touch. But they look at that as sex or, you know, hugging. But physical touch is an unmet need and want by the child. Were you hugged as a man, as a little boy?
Not really.
Did your dad? Yeah. So did your dad?
No, not really.
Did your mom show you affection? Is your love language physical touch?
Somewhat. Yeah. So my love language is acts of love. So I'm trying to see how that would tie in with my childhood. And I can't see it, to be honest with you right now.
Okay, so acts of service, you mean?
Acts of service.
So your dad passed away when you were 6 years old, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to become the man of the house?
Yeah, there was nobody else.
So you had to do everything on your own. You had to take out the trash.
I had to learn a lot of things on my own. I had to do a lot of the manly things. There was no man around, yes.
Are you able to see the connection of having, you were not able to be a child because you had to do all of these service-oriented tasks in the house?
So what if I just say that's what men are supposed to do? That would be my response, right? Men are supposed to take out the trash. Women, you know, they're not supposed to take out the trash. Women are supposed to do other things. We have roles, right? What if that's my cop out for that?
But you said that your love language is acts of service. So
it is.
So what would an act of service be that would be your love language? Like, what would you love for somebody to do for yourself?
I mean, I love it when my wife cooks. That to me, you know, like, I don't need my wife to tell me that she loves me. Like, if she cooks for me, that's an act of service.
Okay. Did you have to cook a lot of meals for yourself when you were a kid?
No, I did not. I think my mom cooked a lot for us. Well, she was the only cook in the house, so by that time. So, yeah.
And it's interesting that you said that you see love as being cooked for. So do you feel like when your mom cooked for you, did you feel love from your mom when she cooked for you? Okay.
Yes.
So what is another act of service that you would love for somebody to do that you don't like to do?
Wow. I'm trying to think of what else. So I'm going to be honest. I feel like I'm a simple guy. And maybe I repress a lot of things in my mind, right? So when I tell my wife I'm an acts of service person, like, I do things for her to show acts of service and love, right? So I feel like me not washing the dishes without being told, that's an act of service, right? That's not her love language. She don't really care about that.
Yeah.
Show love, acts of service, as well as receive love as acts of service. But I'm trying to think, like, what else do I, like, anything you could do, she could do anything for me, right? I accept that more than, you know, her even telling me that she loves me, right? So
yeah.
even being around the house and going grocery shopping, right? By herself and bringing all these, you know, groceries home. Like, that's an act of service, even though I don't mind going grocery shopping. But when she does it, it's like, oh, you know, that's great. I don't have to go to the store. Like, I feel like she's maintaining the house is an act of service, so that, you know, maybe I don't have to do everything, even though I don't mind cleaning the house. Like, those things to me, I prefer more than, you know, her saying anything to me or anything like that. And I'm trying to relate that back to my childhood. Maybe you can help me. I don't see how that relates.
So again, acts of service is something that went unmet, and what it sounds like is that your wife is emulating what your mother did for you to show you love. Did she remarry right away after?
No, she did not. She never remarried.
Okay. So she was a single mom.
Yep.
And without assuming too much, she was probably really busy, right?
Correct.
And so her way of showing you love was through these acts of service. But she, again, single mom running a household, did she have time to do everything and still show you affectionate love?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So you had to take up some of the slack as far as maybe cleaning your room or emptying the dishwasher or, you know, something like that. But a six-year-old boy, yes, men should be taking out the trash. Men should be, you know, doing the repairman, handyman. Should a six-year-old boy be saddled with that type of responsibility? Or should a six-year-old boy feel free to go out and play and ride his bike and be with his friends?
Well, you know, you feel like you're helping, right? You don't take it as you're saddled with responsibility. I didn't interpret it as I was saddled with responsibility. I took it as I'm helping around the house wherever I could, whether it was with the garbage or the dishes, right?
But you were six.
You know, it didn't. Yeah, but I didn't stay six forever. Right. So I felt like, you know, six, seven, you know, I'm growing into these different responsibilities. I had siblings. I had two sisters. Right. And they played their part. So it's not like I was on my own doing everything. So I never interpreted it as a trauma. Right. That's causing me to feel love the way I do now, if you get what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And again, the adult version, the conscious version of you is saying this, but it would be interesting to find out what that little one was deciding about himself in the world when this was occurring. And that's where I come in. That's where I'm interjected into the life, is I find out through a conversation, what was the belief? What were the beliefs that were being created in that moment? And I'm not feeding anything to anybody. I'm allowing that little one to share and have a voice.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, just thinking about it now, I could see certain things, maybe how I feel about certain ways, maybe my confidence or lack of confidence in my self-doubt, maybe that creeps back to, you know, my dad passing, and not being there. Maybe my lack of trust in people, maybe that goes back to that. I don't know, right? Honestly, I've never seen a therapist. I haven't felt bad enough to feel a therapist. And maybe that's a question for you, right? Like, do I need to feel like I'm at the end of my rope to come see you? My audience is probably thinking the same thing, right? Not everyone is like suicidal. Not everyone is depressed. So, you know, at what point is it like, maybe, you know, I should tap into this and tap into my inner childhood to get it out of the way so that, you know, I can become the man I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, you definitely don't have to be suicidal at the end of your rope in order to seek support. What you have to do is you have to take a hard look at yourself, and are you truly happy with where you are in your life? Are you living the abundance that is your birthright? And that can look like different levels. You know, I mean, people's awareness of abundance is going to be different. It's going to be different for everybody, right? It's subjective, I guess is the word. So are you truly happy? If you're in a relationship, is your relationship truly a conscious relationship, or are you just two ships passing in the night and not really addressing the hard issues and just allowing them to kind of like sit by the wayside until the kids are grown and out of the house? Because at some point you're going to have to be living with that person again by yourselves. And are you going to be able to do that in a conscious way, in a healthy way? Something else is, are you in a career that is filling you up and you are excited and you have a purpose to put your feet on the floor that goes beyond providing for your family? It has to be something that is for you and that you feel you are creating the ripple effect and giving something back to the world as a man. If you can say yes to all of those, then you're good. But if there's one inkling, then there is some support that can be that you can seek.
That job one is a tough one because I'm gonna tell you, a lot of people, most people, probably don't enjoy going to work like that. The why is, well, I'm providing for my family.
Yeah.
How can therapy help someone overcome that when you're kind of limited? Like, you have the job that you have.
Finding out what your purpose is and really focusing on that. There's a great book called The Way of the Superior Man that focuses on a man's purpose. If a man doesn't have a purpose, then he is a dangerous man in this world. It's just going through the motions. He's just a robot. There's a great video out there where it's a man and he grows up into this little boy and he grows up into this man and he's wearing this suit and he's on a treadmill and he's running. And then all of a sudden it starts to break apart and it's showing the age above the man running on the treadmill. And he breaks down and then he falls into the grave at like 65. Doesn't even have time to enjoy his life because he's on the treadmill of life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chasing the carrot. The inevitable carrot that is never caught. Those are the people that have to find their purpose.
But we have families to provide for, Nicole. That's going to be the answer. I agree. Let's find the purpose. That's ideal. But Monday morning come, I got to go to work. I have kids dependent on me. That's going to be the majority of men, at least the people I know, right? How do you balance that? Well, I'm trying to find my purpose while I'm dealing with a lot of stuff that I don't want to be dealing with, but I have to deal with because this is the hand I've been dealt with right now.
So what I hear you say is the limiting belief.
Yes. But some limited beliefs are rooted in actuality, if I could phrase it like that.
What is the actuality?
That we have life, we have bills to pay, we have children dependent on us, and we have to do what we have to do to survive.
But the belief that you were saying was, this is the hand that I've been dealt.
Correct. So right now, this is the hand I've been dealt, right? For whatever reason, right, I am in the situation right now and trying to reach that place where I'm this totally balanced human, where I love everything about myself. I'm at peace with myself. I don't have time right now because one way or another, I'm holding a certain hand right now. Maybe it's not a hand I was dealt, right? To not use that phrase, but maybe somehow it's the hand I'm playing right now. So how do I get out of the hand I'm playing right now, understanding that I have to play this hand or else my family's going to be a wreck. I'm going to be homeless, you know, if I don't do X, Y, Z.
That was like 4 or 5 limiting beliefs.
Maybe I'm just a limiting belief person.
No, but these are the beliefs that were somehow created. And so when you say that this is the hand that I've been dealt and these are the cards that I'm holding, these are the cards that you chose because you chose the reality that you're in right now for your soul's evolution. You were given a family. Your family was chosen for you as a soul in order to make the evolution that your soul needed to make in this lifetime. Do you believe that?
Wait, say that again.
So we choose our soul. Our soul chooses our family.
Our soul chooses our family. Wow. You're taking us on the deep end right now.
Sorry. I go deep. Our soul chooses the family in order to have the experience that the soul needs in order to make the evolution in this lifetime. So the family that you had, that was already chosen for you by God. your creator in
Okay.
order for your soul's evolution to occur the way that it needs to. That's why
Okay.
I always caution people not to rob people of their soul's evolution by trying to control them. A lot of people try to control their relationships, their partners, their kids, and I'm like, that is their soul's purpose, and their evolution, and you're robbing them of that. So stay in your lane, focus on yourself, be the change that you want to see in others. Change yourself first, and the others will change around you. I know that that's cliche, but it's true. Once I started changing myself, my environment started to change. My family started to change. They saw the change in me, and they were inspired.
So on a practical level, right, somebody has a wife, kids, right? They're getting up every day, you know, doing what they have to do as men, right? We're men. We have to provide. That's what we're told, right? We can't slack off, right? You can't use the excuse, well, I'm trying to better myself, so I'm not going to go to work for the next week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm trying to get at, right? When my audience hears this, how do they get to that point of finding themselves and becoming what they're supposed to be? While you call it a limiting belief, maybe I see it as living in the real world, right? I'm mm-hmm. trying to live in the real world, provide for my family, but I want to be, you know, this better human, right? How do I get there without totally disrupting what I have currently? Because that then would hurt my family, right? That would hurt my kids and my wife and things like that.
So it all starts with just a small step. It starts with focusing on your purpose. And to focus on your purpose, you don't have to quit your job. You just have to have the idea in your head. You have to have that. Thought creates things, right? You think it, you believe it, and it occurs. That's the whole process of manifestation, right? So you always have to focus on, be careful of your thoughts. That's why I say, be careful with the limiting beliefs, because if you stay in that limiting belief mindset, like if you have a lack mindset, then you're going to continue, your brain is going to continue to find scenarios that's going to keep you in that belief system, because that's where it feels, again, quote unquote, normal, right? But starting with the purpose and just spending maybe 30 minutes to an hour a day on your purpose. And that can look like literally anything. I mean, my purpose is removing the stigma when it comes to men and their mental health. Like, that is my mission. That is my soul's purpose and mission, because no more brothers lost. I am tired of waking up and hearing about another man that has taken his life because he has not felt comfortable sharing the emotions that have been plaguing him and eating away at his cells and DNA and creating the cancers and the chronic diseases and the pains inside of the body. The body being in dis-ease, right? So focusing on your purpose. Doing that for 30 minutes to an hour a day. Put down the screens. Put down the video games. Stop watching TV. Stop watching sports. If you focus 30 minutes to an hour on
that. Stop watching sports? What?
Not forever. Just for 30 minutes to an hour. Like, don't watch Cowherd on ESPN. Or the Herd. Is it The Herd? Yeah, The Herd.
Yes, The Herd.
Yeah. Like, don't watch The Herd or wait, you know, record it and watch it later. Like, there are ways. If people say that they don't have time, that's a cop out. There's always time. You just have to sacrifice something that is in place to keep you numb.
Ooh.
And that is what Western society is really good at doing. Is giving us all of these opportunities to numb. Because an awake society can't be controlled.
Oh.
That's probably going to get me killed, but.
Wow. Wow. No, that's a serious word right there. That's, wow. Wow. All of these things are keeping us numb. and putting them down so we can find our true selves and be awakened is where we should be, what we should be striving for. And
exactly.
we don't have to. So my takeaway, right, is don't look at your current situation and think of, don't make excuses for your current situation. Based on what you're saying, there is still an opportunity to, first of all, the current situation you have was given to you to grow you. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yes.
Right. So it's not, don't use it as an excuse. Use it for the purpose that it was given to you. Allow
exactly.
it to serve its, allow your situation to serve its purpose so that you can grow and to become the man that you're supposed to be.
Exactly. Exactly. Nail, hit, head.
Wow. I like hearing about different points of view. I like hearing about, you know, how the mind works and how people can dig deep into, you know, emotions and bring out, you know, maybe what we've been hiding in our minds and, you know, suppressing and not wanting to talk about. And I do believe that, you know, our childhood impacts our adulthood. And I do believe that a lot of the problems that men face today, you know, date back to their childhood. We never were allowed to cry, right? So how does not being allowed to cry impact us now as adults? I feel like all of that plays a role.
And generational trauma, you know, we haven't even spoken about that. The generational trauma that is carried on. So if a man was taught not to cry by his father, then his father taught him not to cry, and it goes on and on and on. And when we heal those parts of ourselves, we heal, I think it's like 7 generations back and 7 generations forward. And so you're not healing for yourself, you're healing for your lineage. You're healing for your son and the past ancestors as well.
Wow.
So don't just do it for you, do it for future generations as well. The generational curses that plague men, suppressing your emotions. When you see, you know, this is an important statistic to bring up. And I think it was a documentary called The Wisdom of Trauma. And what happened by Gabor Mate, amazing man, a inner child pioneer, and how trauma affected the child into the adult. They went into a California prison, into the maximum security prison, and they put all of the prisoners in a circle, and they had questions. And each time they would ask a question, they would say, if you experience A, B, C, or D, take a step forward. Mm-hmm. And they started out with, if you grew up in a household with only one parent, if you experienced abuse by one or more of your parents, if you went to bed one night without a meal, if you were bullied in school, and they all stepped forward. Maximum security prisoners all stepped forward. Now tell me that trauma doesn't have something to do with how you are conditioned and perceived as an adult and the outcome that is the opportunity. Not always happens, but the opportunity is there when you have experienced severe emotional and physical abuse as a child.
What if, okay, so you went there with the prison. Some people will say, at what point do we stop? Again, me personally, I do believe that childhood impacts adulthood. But what if someone says, at what point do we stop using that as an excuse for criminal behavior, right? Like, you're an adult now. Make adult decisions. Do adult things, right? How do you counter that then?
So your question is, how do you...
How do you counter someone who says, who pushes back against the, well, childhood trauma caused you to kill somebody, for example, right? To use the extreme, right? Like, they're going to say, you're an adult now. Make adult decisions. Make big boy decisions. That's what we're told. right? You're going to hear people say, everybody has trauma in the past. Everybody has experienced something. You don't see us, you know, robbing, and you don't see us doing X, Y, Z, right? How do you approach that, I guess, people pushing back with that excuse, saying, hey, the past is the past. The childhood is the childhood, but we can't give people a pass because their childhood was kind of rough, because there was a lot of us who had bad childhoods who didn't do any of that. What would be your response to that?
So my response is that it's not the adult that's committing the crime. It's the child that's trying to just be seen.
Wow.
And hurt. Because when you go back and you look at these prisoners, this particular group were crying with the people with the clipboards, the researchers that were there. Big tough guys, tattoos all over their faces, you know, big muscular guys coming into their emotions and crying with these people. So again, I don't speak in absolutes, but negative attention is better than no attention at all, right? So if it started out robbing a candy store, you know, shoplifting some candy from a convenience store, and then it just continued because they got attention. They got that attention that they needed. It was negative attention, but it was attention because there's no attention being given in the home. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, that's yes. Yes.
And I'm not an expert in this.
It makes sense because again, I agree with you, and attention, you know, it snowballs from there, and then it ends up being, you know, maybe the person probably didn't even want to end up being a killer, but somehow, you know, it snowballed into that. So to wrap up, right, and end on a positive note, not that this hasn't been a positive episode, but you talk about generations and seven generations forward and back. How do we as men, most of my audience is middle-aged men, right? We're raising kids. How do we help break the cycle? So to bring it full circle, we started off talking about emotionally unavailable dads and things like that. How do we help to break that cycle and allow our kids as best as we can to not experience the traumas that are going to hold them back and prevent them from being who they're supposed to be in the future?
I mean, the best way to do it is to break the cycle with yourself first. And that is seeking support, figuring out how those beliefs were created and breaking that contract, either with somebody like me or somebody else out there in the world. And then having a conversation with your kids, an honest and open conversation. Am I giving you what you need? What more do you want from me as your dad? Do you feel loved? Like, ask these questions and be open to hearing the responses. I think a lot of the breakdown, and I'm not a mom, so I can't speak to this directly, but I think a lot of the breakdown is that they're afraid to hear the answer. Nobody wants to looked at as a bad parent, right? But we have to be able to be open to constructive criticism by the most important people that are reviewing us, which is our children, because we're shaping who they are and who they're going to be as adults. Parenting is a huge responsibility, and I don't think a lot of people understand that going in.
Wow. Yes, that's 100% true. I can attest to that. That's a hard one, that I'm going to have to put into practice. I'm not going to lie. I don't have in-depth conversations with my kids on that level. Right. And part of it, maybe I am scared of what they're going to say or what they're going to ask. And maybe I'm scared I'm not going to have, the answers, but to help them get to where, you know, they should be and to allow them to reach the best of themselves when they grow up. For me and for my listeners out there, I think it's time for us to start having those conversations with ourselves first, heal ourselves, but at the same time, having those conversations with our kids as well to make sure we're fulfilling their needs, even, you know, in their childhood when we don't feel like they don't really have much, many needs outside of, you know, the basics of food, water, you know, shelter. But maybe there's more out there. We just need to tap into that. So I will take that advice. If anything else, I will take that advice, Nicole.
Thank you. Thank you for receiving what I have shared in such a beautiful and gracious way. And I'm going to also offer you or invite you to offer yourself grace and forgiveness for not having the answers for your kids when you do have these conversations. It's okay. You don't have to know everything just because you're a parent, but you do have to open up the space in order to work together. You know, don't look at your kids as having to know everything all the time. You can learn from your children as well.
Okay. I'm laughing because, man, I got to learn from these little guys. What am I going to learn from them? But I'm just joking. You're right. I think as adults, maybe we've learned to adult and you know, I guess we could end it here. We've learned to adult the wrong way. And maybe we need to rethink how exactly what it means to be an adult and to parent kids, because I don't know anyone who's learned how to parent the way you're teaching and having conversations with kids. Am I fulfilling your needs? Is there anything else? Like, I don't know anyone who speaks with their children that way. Maybe my circle is limited, but I'm willing to bet that most of us my age are having these conversations. So being a parent, we weren't taught that. So we're going to give ourselves some grace, guys and ladies. I'm going to give myself some grace so that we don't pass on these traumas to the future generation.
You know, when you talk about that you aren't taught, what do you feel? And I know that this might be a difficult question for you to answer, losing your dad at the age of six, but what do you feel you were missing in your childhood that you wish you could have had? And make sure that you're fulfilling that need to your children. That right there will help break that chain.
So I know an obvious one is I don't talk to my kids as much as I should. So because I'm an introvert, I use that as an excuse to not talk to them as much as I could. So I'm always there. I'm always in their presence. Like I said, we're screen timing together, right? But I never really sat down to talk to anyone, ever like that, right? Whether it's my mom, dad, or anybody. And I don't really talk to my kids. So I know that's a limitation, right? And that I don't talk to them. They probably don't feel like they can open up to me. So, that's that one right there is like an obvious opportunity for improvement for me.
I love that reflection that you have experienced. I want to honor you and celebrate you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I told you when we met, like, I want my audience to get something out of my conversations, but I know I want to get something, and I don't have conversations where I feel like I don't really care about it. So if I'm gonna get something, as much as I love my audience and I want them to get something, I want guests to come on to have those kinds of conversations. So we've been at this a long time. I will certainly love to have you back. But I think we can end it. We can end it here for now. We'll do a part two at some other time. Guys and ladies, like I said, take some time, love yourself, and love your family. Start healing some of that trauma so we don't pass it on to the next generation. Where can people find you, Nicole?
So my website is Nicole Harmony, NicoleHarmony. And on the show notes, I don't know if you have links, but I have a private Facebook group for men only. It's called The Rise of the Masculine. For the ladies, I do have one as well. It's called Ignite the Fire Feminine Within. And I'll have both of those below. And I have Linktree that has all of my podcast episodes. I'll have that link below as well in the show notes. But yes. The best way is just find me on my website, NicoleHarmony.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, again, thank you again for being on, Nicole. Thank you guys for listening and sticking with us for an hour and a half. hit up Nicole, man. It's interesting. Don't say go Cowboys on this show. At least you didn't say go Gators. Then I would have had to cut your mic off.
Well, I have to say go Cowboys. Because we're just in the trash right now.
So. Yeah, no, you guys are going through it. I can't say much because the Dolphins are not better right now. So we're both having terrible football seasons right now, but it's all good. Now, in all seriousness, though, thank you, Nicole, for stopping by, sharing some of this knowledge and experience with us. I hope you guys take it to heart. Put it to practice. Don't just hear or don't do anything. Put it to practice so we can help shape a better generation of young men and women moving forward. All right?
Yeah.
So you guys be good. Mike, Sports in the Real Shit with Nicole Harmony. I will catch you guys next time. Peace. I'm going straight to the top. Just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top.